You are now listening to The Social Hour.
All right, so welcome to the show. This is The Social Hour with your typical bastards. I am Deese.
I'm Brian.
Good morning. It's an early morning show for us. We're sipping on our coffee instead of beer this morning.
Well, going on a couple hours of sleep.
It's a rough night. Sounds like you had you were working, actually. I was just not sleeping.
Yeah. Yeah, so at least I was getting paid for not sleeping, there I suppose.
Go ahead.
Yep, been recording lately on Sunday evenings.
Is that what we've been doing?
Yeah,
I guess that's
or
right.
Or sometimes Tuesdays.
Yeah.
But, it went from getting breakfast in the morning recording. And now that we're doing it live, we've been recording in the evenings, a little better for guests. But back to our old ways, man. How's it feel?
It feels good. You know, either way, I can always bitch any time of the day. So.
Well, who couldn't?
Yeah, so I'm good either way. So it's been a hellacious week for me. I don't know about you. I have just been just swamped trying to get back in the swing of things after my trip, and I am still just trying to get back on track. I'm getting a new house. I'll tell you about that. Moving to a new place.
Exciting. I can't wait to see it.
It's bigger, a real place. I feel like I'm finally going to move into this place. I've always kind of lived in places the last few years, like I'm just moving in or just moving out of it. Like it's like I'm David Banner from that 70s folk show, just moving city to city with a backpack. That little, you know.
Like the guy from Quantum Leap.
Yeah, a little like, well, yeah, exactly. Maybe next time I'm going to leap home. So
yeah.
I'm Scott Bakula.
Yeah.
I'm the new Scott Bakula. Just what I always wanted.
Yeah, that's a great show.
So,
hey, you know what? That guy's still pulling tons of trim at Comic-Con, I'm sure.
You think?
Oh, yeah.
Have you heard about all this stuff going down at Comic-Con this year?
No.
Oh, so I guess like just last night or this morning they had some, you know, because they've got all these girls want to be comic book fangirls now, you know?
It's like the cool thing.
It's trendy.
These girls that are like, I'm such a nerd because you played Mario once. They're not.
Right. They want to be gamers and, you know, whatever. And like, which is, I'm sorry, that's not appealing to me as a guy, by the way. I don't understand, like, who are the guys? Have they seen the guys who play, who are hardcore gamers? They're not that great looking guys.
Those are the 77 virgins that all is promising.
That's right. So, but they found a young girl who was actually underage last night, beaten and bloody and unconscious, and looked like she'd been assaulted. So,
that wasn't part of the costume?
Well, no, it wasn't part of the costume. The sexual assault was probably not part of the costume. It's a bigger thing. I mean, I used to go to San Diego, and we've talked about this before. And yeah, it was great. There were girls running around scantily clad, but it's becoming such an issue where they have to have, like, sexual harassment seminars at the Comic-Con and shit like that. It's like, you know, but look, you're running around with a bunch of these hot girls in, you know, slave Leia costumes.
Yeah, anime schoolgirl costumes. Yeah.
And then you have a bunch of guys who've only jerked off to a Wonder Woman comic book. Like, what do you expect? It's a bad combination. You know?
Yeah, it's a recipe for disaster, I think they say.
Exactly.
So what happened to this girl? A couple guys just got overexcited? And...
Yeah, I guess. I just read the article this morning. They don't really know they're looking for any suspects. So.
Jeez.
Yeah, it's getting rough out there.
Comic-Con is supposed to be harmless, man. You get all these dorky nerds that don't know how to socialize and hanging out.
Yeah.
And now they're beating people up.
Yeah, well, it sounded like it might have been more than that, which is unfortunate. So,
it's a travesty.
But speaking of unfortunate things, I have a couple from my week. Some unfortunate food-related topics. Okay. Let's start with asparagus. Okay.
Asparagus. Yes.
This is something that I've realized that it should be a mandate, a law, that when you buy a bushel of asparagus, is that how you buy asparagus? Bushels? Is it a bushel?
Bushel?
Or is it like
a group, a bunch?
I don't know, we'll say a bunch. We'll say a gaggle. When you buy a gaggle of asparagus, it should come with a sticky note that you slap on your forehead that sticks there for the next 48 hours and says, don't forget, you ate asparagus. Every time you fucking go to the bathroom, I don't think I got some weird STD or something like that, because I start pissing, and I get that weird asparagus piss, and I don't know where it comes from, and it throws me off every time. I always forgot. forget that I eat asparagus. So
right. The next morning, it's a rude awakening. It's you're groggy. You're standing there, and you, bam, then it just hits you.
Yeah, you're like, yeah. Gee, what kind of whore did I? You know, what did I do last night down on Sprague?
Yeah.
You know, I'm ready to run down to the Chaz Clinic and get a swab test.
Imagine people that are into golden showers, like that whole kind of like sexual play. Imagine how they would feel. It's like, were you drinking coffee and asparagus all day yesterday? Oh, like, can you imagine like the shock when it hits their face?
Oh, I tried to. I try to every day.
When you eat your asparagus, that's when you pretend. Hoping that you can surprise someone with an asparagus golden shower.
Just like dip them in water and wiggle them towards my face, hoping that it feels the same.
Down the hatch.
That was one of my food related atrocities this weekend, or this last week. A bigger one, which this is borderline criminal, okay? I'm at a barbecue a couple days ago, right? And. Okay. Then, you know, you've been to a barbecue, hot dogs, hamburgers, things like that.
I have been to a couple.
So they've got the yellow mustard for condiments, right?
Okay.
And then I'm looking around because I eat like a hot dog, you know, I want a good hot dog. And I want some brown mustard. So I'm looking around.
It's only necessary.
It's a staple.
You probably had plenty of ketchup, right?
Plenty of ketchup. But get this. This is even worse than not having the brown mustard was this. Their second choice for mustard, honey mustard.
Oh, okay, what are you dipping chicken nuggets in
exactly
them?
Exactly, what the fuck are we doing, people?
I don't know a single person that's put honey mustard on a freaking hot dog.
No, why would you put, how low is your self-esteem that you have to use honey mustard? I'm like, what kind of monster buys yellow mustard and chooses a second mustard and buys honey mustard?
I agree. It's bullshit.
You gotta go for the brown mustard. That's where it's at.
Yep. It doesn't have to be Grey Poupon.
No.
It's like
no.
The brown stone ground mustard. The can that's got little brown ball bearings in it.
Exactly. That's all I need.
That's where it's at.
Who's at a barbecue? Where is honey mustard on anywhere in the echelon of barbecue condiments? At a barbecue.
I don't even think they would provide that. They wouldn't even glaze the chicken with that if you're grilling some chicken.
No, you're just barbecuing chicken.
Honey mustard is for dipping chicken nuggets in. Right. Mainly. That's why they sell it in stores.
Yeah, if you're having, like, I don't know, maybe a grilled chicken sandwich and endive salad somewhere.
Yeah.
Like, but where,
mix a little vinaigrette in there, have a nice salad dressing.
Right. I don't understand. It's because you're a hot dog guy. You are a connoisseur of hot dogs.
Yes, I enjoy a good Costco hot dog, a good Polish dog. And I love mustard, as you know. I've not got around to making it yet, but I've got some ingredients to make homemade mustard. I love it so much. I'll take yellow, but like I said, brown is the real mustard. That's where it's at. Honey mustard. 12?
Yeah, there's
some ketchup.
Yeah, there's no point. Let's come on. It's
whose barbecue was this? Let's go ahead and shame them publicly.
It was I don't want to say. We'll let them slide for now. If it happens again though. We'll let them know. They're on notice. So, what about you? What's been going on with you this week?
I don't even know, dude. It has been go, go, go.
Yeah.
Saturday night, had some people over. First time we really got to enjoy our new house, Studio 209.
That's right.
Played a little Cards Against Humanity. Pretty fun game.
Was that your first time playing?
That was. I'd always seen it, and people have always talked about it. You can only buy it on Amazon. It's like some kind of exclusive they have there.
Do they own it?
They don't own it. It was just an exclusive distribution deal, from what I understand.
Interesting.
Now, here's what's cool about Cards Against Humanity, though. If you're interested in playing it, you can actually go to Cards Against Humanity's website and download the PDF.
Mm-hmm.
And it comes, like, the PDF download is all the cards. Just take that file to a printer and have them print on good cardstock, and basically you can have the game for free, you know, minus the costs of
printing,
which I think it's kind of cool that they do that.
Okay.
But yeah, this is so much fun game, you know. I feel like everyone's played Apples to Apples.
No,
not you. Okay, well, this will be lost on you, but it's basically an adult version of that.
All right.
Yeah.
I hear everyone talk about it. I've never gotten that far. I've never seen it. I don't know how it's played. It's one of those things that is nowhere and then is everywhere. It's like Lady Gaga was for me.
Yeah.
I had never heard of Lady Gaga.
No.
I didn't know what she did. I didn't know who she was. And then about like 2 years ago, all of a sudden she is everywhere.
Who's this bitch wearing meat suits?
And I'm like, who is it? Yeah, anyway, I had no idea who she was or what she does. I'm still not sure what she does.
I think she sings.
I could
be wrong. And inspires, you know, transgender people everywhere.
Yeah, well.
She's like their champion.
Well,
she's born this way.
RuPaul out of a job, huh?
Apparently.
What's he doing now? Or she? Or that?
Yeah, or it? I don't know.
What? Whoever. So.
That's a good question.
All right, well, Cards. Cards Against Humanity. Maybe we'll have to try it out sometime.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, if you have, like, we had six people, I feel like 6 to 10 would be good. Just playing with 4 people would not work out too well. Essentially, I won't bore everybody with the details here for you, but you pick, there's black cards and white cards. You pick a black card, and it'll say something, quote-unquote, horrible on it, and then you try to pair up a white card with it. I try to give you a good example, but I can't really think of any.
Fair enough. Black states. And white, yeah, that's frowned upon in Arkansas.
It's against humanity, you might say.
Against humanity. I think it's against God, is what the Bible says. So
there's that. Been working a lot. Been trying to enjoy this good weather.
That's been great.
This week is flying by, though. I'll tell you what, it's already Wednesday.
Yeah.
And, bam, it's going to be the weekend soon, my weekend.
Yeah.
Got a couple days off this week.
Yeah, I'm chilling in the middle of the week doing some, get some lake time. So,
speaking of trendy things, you're talking about, bam, suddenly out of nowhere, you've got Lady Gaga, the Cards Against Humanity. Something that I've been seeing a lot lately that's always bugged me, just because I'm kind of a Grinch about certain things, as you know. And one thing I'm really hating right now are trendy words, for lack of a better term. And I see them on Facebook all the time. I'm seeing them eke their way into mainstream media. And I'm talking about things like...
Turn down for what? Come on.
I'm talking about things like...
No filter.
Hashtag.
I don't know. What are you...
YOLO.
I don't know what you're talking about. So...
Not even so much those. I'm talking about basic things like boom.
Boom.
Epic. Mind equals blown. Shit like that on Facebook. It's like, hey, everybody want to get together at the park and play some ball later? Yeah, there'll be a little conversation. Someone's like, inevitably like, boom. Or something, you know? Oh, you ate at that new place, Nudo, last night? It was good. Boom. It drives me crazy seeing this shit. Like, it's instant, like, douche. Or, like, epic. Like, oh, man, it was epic. It's like, epic was so 2005. Right. I mean, shit, when they made that movie, Epic Movie or whatever, it's like, you know that movie, that phrase is past date.
You know what? You know what I hate about epic? Is that there's no going back from epic.
It's true.
Meaning, once something is epic, if you just say, yeah, that was good. It sounds like it was a piece of shit. It sounds like you got a fucking half a hand job in the back of a fucking, you know,
it was
92
epic.
Daihatsu.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, this is good. You know? So you can't, good is no longer good.
Yeah.
It's like soft drinks.
Yeah.
Large is no longer large. Small is large.
Sure.
So you have large is, you know, the gigantic, you can't get a medium or whatever. It's like you can't get a small drink. Everything's just epic or good or it's got to be fantastic or like bigger, larger. Nothing is just like good means nothing anymore. If someone said that was good, what would you think? Oh, that must have blown, you fucking donkey nuts.
Yeah. It was only good. I don't want part of that.
Yeah, we've gone as far as we can go.
Extreme.
Yeah, from our actual articulation of words has now gone as our vernacular has reached its max.
Yeah.
We can't, you know, where do you go after epic?
Fantastic.
Super epic.
Yeah.
You know, like the zenith.
Yeah.
I don't know where we go. The other one I hate too that I see all the time is that I don't know where it comes from, but it's like they're saying, oh my god, it's like, oh my god.
Oh, Ermagerd.
What the fuck is that? I hate it. I hate how people spell it out. It just fucking like, it sounds like fucking. When it's spelled out and when you say it how you think it's supposed to be said, it sounds like the thing Kermit the Frog is trying to say when he's jerking himself off about to come to autoerotic asphyxiation. He's like, oh my god! Like,
that's probably what Jim Henson had in mind when he created Kermit also.
I don't understand it.
That essentially, remember how when Dave Chappelle's show came out and he did the whole Rick James skit and he's like, I'm Rick James, bitch, and then everybody was going around repeating that, like,
right.
They thought they were funny.
Right.
And that's kind of what this Ermagerd thing is. Back in 2000, this was like 2 or 3 years ago now, there was a meme that came out and it was like this really nerdy chick, like braces, ponytails, she had this expression on her face and she was holding a bunch of Goosebumps books. And the meme said, Ermagerd, Burks, and it looked like she would talk like that because the braces on her face.
Yeah.
And they just kind of caught on. And then from there, people started photoshopping another object, like Ermagerd, cats, or whatever.
Yeah.
And so that's just an offshoot of that. But yeah, it's pretty stupid. It's unoriginal and not funny. Mind equals blown. The other thing I see all the time is someone posted a video of like a cat, a kitten that was walking on a ledge and then it tipped over and fell off. And somebody decided to sync it up with
like
a song.
What was that? It was like that.
Dun dun dun. Sail.
Yeah.
No, that video was funny, but some of the comments on there are like, pure genius. Brilliant. Like, what was that pure genius?
Yeah,
was that brilliant?
No, some fucking stoner in between jerking off decided he...
In between SpongeBob's episodes.
Yeah. It was just like listening to some music and saw a cat video.
Yeah.
And happened to sync him up.
Yeah.
That was genius. Yeah.
Pure genius.
Yeah.
Pure genius.
Him and, yeah, him and, you know, Benjamin Franklin and all these other guys.
Tesla. He's in the same grade as Nikola Tesla.
Yeah, he's just great geniuses, you know.
Yeah.
That guy. Well.
So that was my little rant. I see a lot of stuff like that on Facebook, and it drives me up the wall.
Yeah.
Can't handle it. Oh, the other thing, too, as long as I'm bitching about stuff that's really stupid, doesn't mean anything, is when people start conversation, this is kind of falls in line with epic. Like, they think they're saying something, like, very noteworthy, is when they start a sentence with yep. Yep or yep. Like, they'll post a picture of, like, their car with a bumper hanging off, and they'll be like, yep, that happened. You know what I mean? Like, I see that a lot, and that always would bother me for some reason.
Yep.
Rubbing me wrong. Yeah. Or just like, yep, it's a hot one out, or like, yep, just starting a sentence with yep.
Yep or yep.
Yeah, either. Usually it's yep with an E.
What about yeah?
I don't see that. I don't think it has the same
effect.
People just don't use that, though.
Yeah, it's true.
In that same regard, in the same way. But anyway, I sound like an uptight and retentive grammar Nazi right now, but I just bugs the shit out of me.
Well, no, it's that shit that like everyone catches on to and then just wants to like... It's unfortunately that... Like, when we were kids, 20 years ago, words like this couldn't, and things like this couldn't get fucked out because you only talk to 7 people in your life. You know, the kid you live next to and a couple people that you went to school with. And beyond that, you didn't know anyone else. Now you fucking know everyone in the goddamn world.
Sure.
So literally you can connect with anyone, anywhere in the world. So everyone is now saying these same things.
Also. Boom!
Yeah, and it's just,
Ari Gold got that one started. As much as I love the show Entourage, Ari Gold, his whole thing was like, boom! This was back in like 2003, 2004.
Jeremy Piven's character.
Yeah, and he popularized it. Now, interesting note about that, like you said, when you were a kid, internet didn't really exist. Yet, I don't know if this is the collective unconscious or if there was some other form of media that things were traveling through, but like every kid collectively knew the lava monster game. Or like the floor is lava.
Floor is lava.
Like maybe it's just intuitive, like we want to just hop around on furniture. Why? Because the floor is lava.
Yeah.
But other things like girls, for instance, would always play that those patty cake style games.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with like the rhyme in my mind, you know, like that kind of shit. And they were all it was the same across the board. They all knew it. Like how did that travel? Like how did every girl seem to know that?
Yeah, it's just one of those things that. I don't know if it's ingrained in us or if like it's something we're taught in school, because like I think a lot of those things are older than us even.
Yeah, without a doubt.
So like they're games that like probably they have an older sister who was taught by an aunt or blah blah blah. What I always wondered is those, you know, rumors like about people like you know, like there is that rumor, I don't know if you've heard this, that like the girl does the Dannon commercials now. She used to be in Halloween.
Jamie Lee Curtis.
Jamie Lee Curtis.
How you shitting is basically what those commercials come down to.
Yeah, with just a little stomach and little bubbles going around on the like simulated stomach. Like, oh, I don't want to think about Jamie Lee pooping.
Yeah, thanks.
So there was this rumor, like urban legend, how she was a transgender. I don't know if you've heard that.
She was born hermaphrodite.
Right, yeah, hermaphrodite or whatever. So. How does something like that get started, and how does it become, or like Rod Stewart
swallowed
like,
a gallon of semen? Yeah, yeah.
Like how did that get started, and then how does it spread to where? I mean, everyone knows that story.
Yeah, yeah, everybody.
And this was before the internet.
Yeah, I heard that when I was like in like 96.
Right.
You know, people talking about it. Yeah, that exactly. Good point. How do these urban legends get started?
I mean, things went viral before they could go viral on a computer. They just like it was much slower process, I imagine.
Probably.
But I believe it. I'm gonna believe all of them.
I would like to.
I don't have evidence against it.
My childhood is based on that. So.
Yeah, sounds like an interesting childhood.
But it's like video games too. Remember, I was like, oh man, if you know in Super Mario Bros, you get this one level, and if you do this certain move, and like there's like no way to verify it.
Like
everybody had like, oh, this, did you hear about this one trick you can do? And I'd spend hours trying to find it. I never could.
Never could.
But because it turned out it was bullshit. And now you can just look anything up on YouTube or whatever. But
oh, that's right.
Yeah, crazy times, man. Spreading things word of mouth.
I heard we better wear software, though.
I imagine it's got its pros and cons.
All right.
Yeah.
All right.
So, what else?
Well, I guess something I want to get into. I don't know if you have any other, like, little social things going on.
Okay, this, well, this if you're going to say
might,
that.
This might
okay,
go off on a tangent for a minute.
Okay, okay. So we'll finish up with my little social rant. Here's the last thing. You can appreciate this. This also kind of has to do with FB. This spurred it. We always talk about how things come and go in waves, it seems like. Mm-hmm. Again, I don't know if it's collective unconscious or what, but lately there's been a wave of what I'm going to refer to as pretentious bartender bullshit.
Mm.
And I've got a lot of server friends, as you do.
Are you talking about pretentious bullshit on Facebook? Or
yes.
Okay.
Yes, not like real life. I'm not talking about like server drama or something, but... Like, lately I've been seeing a lot of articles posted on Facebook. I saw some this morning before you came over. Saw a couple last night.
Yeah.
I'm sure you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I do.
I see it all the time, and I got a ton of server friends. I've got a lot of cook friends, a lot of industry people friends, and I love them all. I respect them all, so I'm not shitting on them. I respect what they do.
I respect some of them.
Sure. Okay, in general. I respect the industry and what it can be. But, dude, when I see lists like 8 things your bartender does not want to hear, and then it's like, shit like, make me a drink, or can I have a water? What do you recommend? It's like, shut the fuck up. That's your job. You're going to get all kinds of people in there. Or I just saw one recently about tipping, and it was some article about, you know, it's like, I'm a college graduate, and I'm bussing tables, waiting tables. I only make like $4 an hour in this part of the country.
Fucking classes in college, dumbass.
Exactly. It's like my tips shouldn't have to subsidize your kid's income or your kid's living. It's like, that's your job. That's what you picked. You're going to have shitty tippers. And it's like, you know, the cooks in the back of the house sweating their ass off who are barely making minimum wage, and you're bitching because you only make $100 in 4 hours.
And
shut
the
up.
Tips, the cook may get tipped out.
Yeah.
May get tipped out, depending on the place. They get tipped out, like, I think they tip them out like 10% of the servers do at some place, like 10%.
Yeah.
It should be more, because those are the guys that are busting their ass, too. Yeah, like you said, I mean, they're the ones that are probably making less than, I mean, than the servers on the floor, and no tips.
And the servers want to bitch about how they only made $100 in 4 hours.
What I don't understand is where did society come down on what is tippable and what is not?
Yeah.
Like, when did we decide that we tip the guy who makes us coffee at Starbucks, but we don't tip the guy who makes us a burger and fries and a drink at McDonald's?
Yeah.
Like, why is that different?
That is interesting. Yeah.
You know. Who do we tip and who do we not tip? I mean, you give, like, if somebody helps you, a real estate agent, you buy a house. I would say they've done a lot more for you than pour of you a fucking cup of coffee. Don't they deserve a tip? I mean, granted, you don't want to do a 10% tip on that.
Yeah, well, they're still getting their, they get a good commission.
Right,
but
they get a good commission. They're doing it as a job, but isn't that the point? We're doing this as a job. Like, why are we forced to subsidize your income because you have a shitty job that employer doesn't want to pay you?
Exactly.
So, yeah. And then
take it up with your employer. That's what I always say when I see these articles. It's like, well, if you're complaining about how you make $4 an hour, and, you know, when we don't tip 15 an hour, or 15% at least, you're getting shafted. So we'll talk to your employer about that.
Yeah.
Or get a different job. Quit bitching about it. That makes me not want
to
tip.
And going back to the bar thing, what happened to the good old days? Like, talking like 88 cocktails, Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
When these guys
great
were
–
it is a film.
It's a great film.
Coughlin
and Locke.
When these guys were showmen, and these guys were true mixologists, and they were good at their job, and it wasn't even like you could order a drink, but they would just make people drinks too. It was just like, I'm gonna make you this, and they were happy to, because they wanted to, you know, show off how good they were at their job, being able to make a good drink for you, and that impressed people. You know, now it's just like, what do you want? Oh, you know what you want? Come back later then. You know, it's not
seriously.
It
you're wasting my time. I've got other people to serve.
Yeah.
Exactly what some of these articles say.
Right. Like, you know, maybe do your job a little better.
Yeah.
And someone may not know what they want to drink and be like, well, I don't know, I like tequila or something like that. Like, oh, well, let me whip you up a tequila drink. You know, be like sweet or sour, blah blah. Get a couple things and show that you're good at your job.
Yeah.
If you are a true mixologist, a true bartender, or you are or there's a line. You're either a mixologist or you're a fucking bartender.
Sure.
A bartender pours drinks. You know, a mixologist, it has a craft.
Yeah.
You know, so most of these douchebags are just fucking bartenders, the minimum wage bartenders that don't have skills to do anything else in real life.
Yeah.
So
true. Yeah, we see a lot of that in Spokane. lifers.
Yeah.
You know, anyway, you're totally right.
But I love you all, and thank you for the free drinks that I get all the time, and you're the best, and I'll always come see you. Hearts.
Yeah. Hashtag love.
Yeah.
But, I mean,
hashtag epic love.
Yeah. But that's, I'm not shitting on the people who nobody means or the industry in general. Just, I see some of this stuff. And to me, it kind of goes hand in hand with how it's becoming the norm to have crappy service. I mean, we've talked about it before. A couple restaurants in town nearby have really fallen off. And it's like lackadaisical service is acceptable. Service with attitude is acceptable. It's, a lot of it's becoming hipster first, service second.
You know,
and that's, that's like eking through on these fucking Facebook posts I'm always seeing. It's like that kind of attitude.
Well, it's more and more. And I wonder if part of what we're seeing is because the Spokane nightlife scene is so incestuous. And what I mean by that is there's a lot of brothers and sisters fucking each other.
Yeah.
What I mean is they all support each other. The main income from every bar is bartenders from another bar.
Yeah.
That is the most, the biggest thing for them is they go and drink at other people's bars, support each other's bars, which is great.
You've heard of the revolving 20, I'm sure. Like, someone will tip out 20 and they'll tip it to
the
next person.
Oh, yeah. It's just, exactly. The bar, that kind of thing. Exactly. It just goes around. You know, it's the same 20 if everyone's touched it at that point. Yeah. Exactly.
Loaded with cocaine.
Right. A couple times. But, you know, my point is, I wonder if part of the reason we're seeing the service industry go down because so many of the people are servers themselves, and they're okay with taking the less quality service because the people who are serving them are their friends, and they understand, like, oh, well, they're busy, they're this, they're that, so they're accepting shittier service, which allows the server to feel it's okay to give shittier service, and it validates their shitty service.
Yeah.
And it just steamrolls and becomes, you know, snowballs and snowballs and snowballs. And you know what I'm saying?
Just grows from there, yeah. Becomes normal.
Yeah.
Sure.
So it is unfortunate because there are a couple places in the last year that I used to really like that I've written off and will no longer go to anymore.
Yeah.
You know, the list in Spokane continues to grow for me.
It's unfortunate, yeah.
Luckily there's new places that have opened up that I'd like to. So, I mean, we've got, you know, but it's just one of those things. So,
yeah. All right. Well, that's pretty much end of Facebook rant for me. So, you had something you wanted to jump into.
I do. This was interesting. I've kind of been doing some research on this for several years, actually. But this is I wouldn't say research. I've followed it. Been a thing of it. But I want to talk about the legalization of marijuana, which we talked about before, but I want to talk about it again. Because it just became legal in Spokane to sell recently, okay?
This is where you don't have to have a medical card, correct? You be 21 or over, go in, you can buy some grams or whatever.
This is kind of twofold. We're going to start out with the legalization and why it should be legal.
Okay.
Or let's put it this way. Because Oregon is looking at doing it next. You know, I'm surprised it didn't pass this time. But Oregon's actually got a lot of conservatives considering how liberal Portland is.
Yeah, and what's interesting, not to catch up, I just recently saw some ads showing up in Alaska, and they're pushing to legalize it. It was on the back of a city bus in Anchorage. It had a picture of whiskey, a picture of beer, and a picture of pot leaf, and it said beer, liquor, and then under the pot leaf it said safer.
Yeah.
And, like, they're pushing to it, and I heard New York is kind of in talks about that right now.
This next time it comes around, California, Oregon, and Alaska will all definitely go legal. I don't know enough about the East Coast, New York. They are very, very, they have very strict drug laws, though.
Yeah.
So I think it's going to be trickier in New York. I mean, they have like zero tolerance drug laws and things like that. So, but Oregon's talking about doing it next, and they've estimated that in their first fiscal year in tax revenue, they would get $38.5 million.
Wow.
Over the next 2 years, $78.7 million. In comparison, in the first 10 days of marijuana sales in Washington state, the state took in $318,000 in excess taxes.
Wow.
Okay. That's 10 days. And I realize $318,000 isn't going to fix our state in you know, but that's 10 days.
And for just barely a handful of shops.
Right, and exactly. Because I think they only had like 23 they let open originally or something like that in the state. So you're talking 10 days, 318,000. As that multiplies over a year, I mean, that's crazy dollars.
Yeah.
You know, I don't have a calculator right here with me, and I'm not Asian, so I can't do math that fast.
Interesting.
But that's a lot of money. So why have we taken so long to get to this point as a society? Like, this, do they understand what this money is going to go to? I mean, they're talking about, this is how they want to spread it, too. 40% of the tax revenue would go to schools, 35% would go to state and local police, and 25% would go to drug treatment, prevention, mental health programs.
Huh.
That seems like a pretty good distribution.
Yeah, that does, yeah.
That's a lot of money. I mean, we took way too long to get on this boat. I mean, I have been screaming for years about legalizing marijuana.
Yeah, it makes sense. All the numbers add up.
Absolutely.
The only people that I feel like are against it are people like my girlfriend's grandparents. Super old conservative. They just hear, drug, bad.
Well, right. Yeah, the irony is, think reefer madness from 1930s
exactly.
or whatever.
And the irony of it is that they drink. Not to excess by any means, but
right.
That just boggles my mind. It's like people just blindly follow that because it's illegal, it must be bad.
Right.
Alcohol is legal, so therefore it's okay. It's like,
right. Well, alcohol was illegal for a while,
too. For a while, yeah.
So, you know, it's... I always laugh because my family, my immediate family, is incredibly religious, and I am an atheist, so
yeah.
Christmases are awkward. But my mother takes like Paxil and anti-anxiety medication, right? And I used to always argue with her. I go, so let me ask you this: why do you? Because I approach every argument. I build my case first. Like,
you know, going into it.
Yeah, I only take an argument.
Opening and closing statements.
That's
prepared.
Exactly.
Yeah. Rehearsed in the mirror a bunch of times.
So as you can see, good people of the jury,
if you look at Exhibit A,
doesn't fit. Yeah. Don't you? So I go, why do you take Paxil? She goes, well, it relaxes me. Okay. So it eases your anxiety. Yes. And I go, it helps you. Sleep. Yes. It just makes it easier to get through life for you, on a daily basis, correct? Yes. Okay. Well, that's the same thing weed does for me, I used to tell her. When I smoke weed, I don't smoke weed anymore.
Right.
And that's the honest truth. I used to quite a bit. I don't anymore. So actually, the whole legal pot thing, I don't have a dog in the fight. I just think it makes sense.
Yeah. Same. I don't smoke. It's been years. Since I smoked. But yeah, I agree. We're in the same boat.
So, and I go, so why, how come something that your God created, put on this earth, and heals everything, all the ailments that you're having, you think is illegal, but a doctor can go into a lab, synthesize medications, create something from scratch, and give it back to you, and you'll take that, and that's okay.
Because he's a doctor.
Because he's a doctor. Oh, cause, so that makes it okay.
Yeah.
So you don't trust God here. Let's trust the doctor.
God made the doctor.
All right.
So, I don't know. I would imagine
so
it's something along those lines.
So smoke the doctor? I don't know. But the whole thing, and my point's always been this. It does, legalizing pot does so much. We're talking about the tax revenue it means. Mm-hmm. I mean, the amount of money you can put back into a state. The cities, et cetera, is astronomical. We could, if all the states did legalize marijuana and were collecting tax revenue, I would bet that inside of a decade, if not sooner, we would have we would no longer have a deficit, we would have a surplus of money and a continuous income in this state, in this country. We could fix our whole economy by legalizing marijuana.
Yeah.
If you just look at the figures from a couple states and multiply that by 50, it also frees up law enforcement court systems for real crimes, violent offenders, people who deserve to be in jail.
You mean the mom in Kentucky that was caught with less than an eighth? It was sentenced to 36 years. And she didn't deserve that?
Yeah. Oh, right. No. Well, she was just an animal needed to be taken off the street.
Apparently, yeah.
You know. Well, I mean, the thing is, by nature, these people, most of the people who smoke weed are not criminals.
Sure.
They're criminals because by letter of the law, because you're not allowed to smoke weed. So, but they're not out there robbing banks and raping people and, you know, armed robberies, things like that. That's not happening. They go home, they have a job, they've got some kids, they pay their taxes.
Sure.
You know, they've got car insurance, they got a mortgage, they go home, smoke a little weed, and, you know, sit there and make sure their kids are fine. Like, that's it. That is 98% of the people who smoke weed.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. You know, there's some other people that smoke weed, and, you know.
There are criminals that smoke weed, but not everyone who smokes weed is a criminal.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and I saw something recently that was pretty astounding. There's one marijuana arrest every 42 seconds.
Jeez. In America. Wow.
That's a good use of our resources, right?
Yeah.
I mean, do they think, like, every 42 seconds we're taking down the next Pablo Escobar? Like, we have just, we have stopped. So many Pablo Escobars today. Like, these are just guys with a little bit of weed. And, you know, like you said, they do incredible amounts of time. On average, people who are caught with less than less than an ounce of weed in America do more prison time than people who are convicted for manslaughter.
Jesus.
So you can kill someone. Not accident.
Yeah.
Accidentally kill someone.
Wink, wink.
Or the Kentucky mom who has a little bit of weed, smoking weed, and gets 36 years. What's more fair?
Yeah. Jesus. Yeah, that is ridiculous.
It's crazy, you know? I mean, there's some just staggering statistics. Nearly one in every...
We're talking about weed, not black tar heroin.
Yeah. This is marijuana.
Jesus.
Marijuana. Nearly one in every six inmates in the federal prison in the United States is serving time for marijuana.
How many?
One in six.
Wow.
Let's see. There were 1,841,182 drug-related arrests in America last year. Marijuana accounted for more than 47% of the total drug-related arrests. And how many of those were, like, giant drug busts, do you think?
Oh, none. Basically, yeah. On the scale.
So that translates to nearly 900,000 people arrested for marijuana-related offense in a single year. 89% of these arrests were for the offense of marijuana possession. So not even trafficking or anything.
Not even enough for distribution.
Right, just possession. 89% so of 900,000 people were arrested just for possession of marijuana. You know, the estimated cost exceeds over $75 million a year in some states.
Wow.
For these arrests.
To lock these peaceful people up?
Yep.
Good thing.
These reports are based on involving processing a misdemeanor arrest, which costs approximately $52,000. So we're talking about misdemeanor cases where these people are just going to a fucking Phish concert.
Yeah.
You know? Right. Like, they're not doing...
Seeing a Grateful Dead cover band.
Right. Yeah. And they're getting arrested because they've got a couple joints on them. And now we're taking cops off the street in big cities, too, like New York and things like that. Especially who they're talking about here, up to $2,000 it costs the city. We're not talking about the criminal, quote unquote, the person being arrested.
Yeah.
Just the city to just process that, do the paperwork and everything like that. And what are we doing to ourselves? I mean, does this seem ridiculous?
Yeah, highly ridiculous, man. It blows my mind that there's such regulation with it. How much would it suck to live in the Bible Belt? I just think that'd be miserable
for a lot of reasons.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
I feel like that's where a lot of this stuff goes down. What? You got that wacky tobacco?
Yeah,
that kind of shit.
It's I don't know, but there's all. It's one of those things. I don't understand why we're still fighting about it. Like, just, you know, you can look. I drink alcohol. I don't smoke weed. But if someone were to ask me, if they were to put on a ballot, say, we're going to make weed legal and alcohol illegal, or we're going to keep alcohol legal and keep weed illegal, I would vote to legalize marijuana and make alcohol legal. For this reason only, it is better for our society than alcohol is.
Yeah, absolutely.
Our society would be better. There'd be no car accidents. There'd be zero car accidents.
Virtually, yeah.
Everyone would be driving slower.
Everyone's getting plowed on bikes. Right. You know, you run the stop line, stoplight.
It's, you know, it's just a better thing. There's almost 100,000 alcohol-related deaths every year in America. there's been zero marijuana-related deaths pretty much ever.
Yeah.
So you don't overdose on it. You don't go smoke a bunch, smoke a blunt and go home and beat your wife or kids.
Typically not. You go home and beat yourself.
That's right.
Pretty much. You know who does love keeping marijuana illegal? The private prisons. I'm sure they're just reaping the benefits of that.
Well, that's true.
Just raking in all kinds of money, which that could be a topic for another time, but privatization of prisons, man.
Well, yeah, it's an industry.
Yeah.
I actually met a guy who built private prisons.
Oh, yeah?
Makes a lot of money.
I bet.
Yeah.
I'm not surprised.
There's a couple of things. It's funny, though, because the legalization of pot, I always get in this argument with people. They assume it's like... They assume it's just like, it's one of those slippery slope things. Like, well, then crack's going to be legal. Then coke's going to be legal.
Yeah.
But there are countries where drugs are, is it Sweden or such?
Portugal. They decriminalized everything 10 years ago.
And they don't have a drug problem.
No. Violent crime is down. They said ODs are down. They're getting, you're not so much worried about what's cutting your heroin.
Right.
If you feel like you want to shoot up.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff. But yeah, I think they decriminalized everything about 10 years ago. And there's been drastic declines in crime,
mm-hmm.
drug dependency, and ODs.
There you go. It's like how they don't have alcohol issues in places like Italy and France in the youth. Because from a very young age, as young as even 10, 12, 13 years old, they are drinking wine with dinner.
Yeah,
it's
they're taught to respect it.
Right. It's part of their dinner culture.
Yeah.
So they very much, it's not taboo. Where in America, it's like, don't touch that, don't drink that, not da da da. And then all of a sudden, the day you turn 21, go nuts.
Woo!
Yeah,
yeah.
You're responsible enough now.
Yeah.
Yeah, it makes no sense. So they if we were taught to really respect these drugs, understand what they do, instead of just the hyperbole, and that they put behind it now. It's or the not the hyperbole, but they put what's the word I'm looking for? I don't know. It's crazy. What they put behind it, what they tell you it is, and what it really is, propaganda was the
there
word I'm looking for. The propaganda that they use to talk about drugs is ridiculous. So
yeah, it really is.
There's a couple topics like this that because my mother. Extremely right-wing Christian.
Sure.
There's a couple things she always says. She tries to tell me that I'm very right-wing. And that I'm a Republican. Because she always wants to get in political debates with me. Which is terrible because I'm more up on politics than she is. And I'm smarter than she is. So
sure.
She always loses. But I always tell people I am... And I think we've had a conversation you feel the same way. I am... socially very liberal. I'm fiscally very conservative.
Yeah, it's kind of standard libertarian tagline.
Yeah, and I very much just think people should be able to do whatever the hell they want as long as it doesn't infringe on other people.
Yeah, absolutely. That's how it should be.
There's a couple things that I always say though that make me extremely not right wing and the left. The weed, legalized weed is one of them. Pro abortion.
Yeah,
I'm for abortion. I don't know how you stand on that one, but...
Yeah, I am more or less for it.
Yeah.
Especially in certain situations. Like, I got a couple of good Christian buddies, a good friend of mine, and we're having this discussion. And if there's a woman that's a victim of a rape and it results in a pregnancy, by all means, she should be able to terminate it.
Yeah.
He's like, well, but, that life could turn out to be something great for her. I'm like, it could, but also could not. It could ruin her life, so...
Right. It could be a constant reminder of her rape and like
where you came from, you little shit. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Oh, your father was a sailor.
He
died in the war. Yeah.
Then she runs off to cry.
Like, cry and cut herself in the shower. so quick shower. My policy with abortion is this. I think every girl should get two abortions. One, first one. All right, you fucked up. You get that abortion. Second abortion, we will give you that abortion. Not give it. You're going to pay for it.
Yeah.
You can have the abortion.
We'll grant it.
But it's like a punch card. First one, after that second one, we immediately take you to the hospital and sterilize you. That's my role. If you've had on your second abortion, you're going to give it to you.
Yeah.
But you don't get to have kids anymore. Clearly, you are too fucking irresponsible to have kids. And
that we're going
to
pay for, like we've talked about.
You know? Right, that we're going to pay for and keep you, you know, and you just keep fucking and keep crapping out shitty kids or keep having abortions. It's not a form of birth control.
Yeah.
It's a whoops once, whoops twice, that's maybe, it. Yeah. That's it. You're done.
That's not a bad policy. I mean, we know, shoot, the first person that comes to mind that's had like three or four, or our buddy's old girlfriend. We don't really see him anymore.
Well,
like girl like that. It's like, yeah, you should probably get that those tubes tied.
Yeah, that's yeah, just fucking glue that shit up. Don't glue it up. She's still got some
staple
use.
It.
I mean, I literally know a girl who's had like five abortions, and that was a couple years ago.
So and they're just like, yeah, whatever about it.
Yeah, it's like Jesus Christ, girl, like, stop fucking, use a condom, come on the tits, anything, just something, seriously. Something. But I mean, you know I've told you what we need to do to make this better.
Cash for uterus.
Well, cash for uterus.
Yep.
My more extreme program is the sterilization agent in the municipal water system.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's my ultimate goal.
So it kind of works like a lottery, and some people are going to get sterile, some don't?
No, I think I want it to sterilize everyone. And then if you want to have a kid, you have to fill out an application.
Oh, I gotcha. Get the antidote or whatever,
right.
So to speak.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah.
You fill out an application, give me your debt-to-income ratio, your housing, your medical history, your health history, mental health history. It's like an algorithm we'll set up, you know, to determine if you are allowed to have kids that will produce good kids, you know, mentally healthy, sound in body, and able to, you know, be productive citizens. Otherwise, we just say no. Or if we're going to have to pay for your kid, no.
Yeah.
No.
I'd vote for that.
I'd vote for it, too.
I like it.
I've said this a million times, but it's, you know, kids are something you can have that costs money. You can have with impunity for free.
Exactly. Like we said, you have to have a license to catch a fish, shoot a deer.
Right.
But anyone can squirt out
just
a kid.
Just shit out kids, no problem. It's like, I fucking want a Lexus. No one's subsidizing that for me. Okay? You know, you want a kid, great. I want a Lexus. Fucking, where's my Lexus?
Sure.
So.
Fuck that. I want a Gulfstream, man.
There you go. There you go. So. All right. Well, we'll take a quick break. We're going to come back with our guest here. We're going to have Ben Lukes from Perry Street Brewery, the head brewer owner of Perry Street Brewery. So we're going to take a quick break and come back and chat with him.
All right. See you then.
Listen up, people. This is Dees. I'm here to tell you, for all your website needs, you need to go to jenswebdesign.net. She's cheap and she's easy and she'll take care of you. Websites are for everyone. You need one. Everyone's got one. It's like herpes. Look, go to jenswebdesign.net. That's .net, not .com. The .com age is over. It's not 2001. Live in the now. Go to jenswebdesign.net. Tell her the typical bastard sent you, and you'll get taken care of well. Now back to the show.
Back with the social hour with the typical bastards with our guest here today, Ben Lukes, the owner of Perry Street Brewing over here in the lovely Perry District on South Hill. Ben, how you doing?
Doing well, guys. Thanks for coming out and having some beers with me at 10:30 in the morning.
Yeah, PM, you mean?
PM.
Yeah, that's right. If my boss is listening, PM. PM.
Oh, boy.
Well, thanks for having us. We're glad to be here. So.
Yeah, one of our favorite spots in town. So yeah. It's a pleasure for us to be able to do this.
Always love to come here and be able to drink some beer. So. Yeah. We are drinking on the Beer de Garde right now, is that correct? Are we all drinking on that?
You guys are on the Beer de Garde, I'm on the Northwest Pale. And
you're on the Northwest Pale.
Okay.
Tell us just quickly a little bit about the Beer de Garde we're drinking.
Yeah, so the Beer de Garde is, it's got a French Saison yeast, and the profile on that is it really, you ferment it very hot, and it brings out the natural Belgian type esters, and then it ferments extremely low, takes almost all the sugar out of it. So we've got simply some Franco-Belgian malts. They're all from France and Belgium. A lot of Vienna and special aromatic in there to give it a nice balance and backbone, and then just letting the yeast run wild, just let it do its thing after that.
So where do you find hops like that? You just mentioned they were from
Well, the malts, the malt is all imported through just gigantic companies out in Portland.
So you have a distributor that you go to, you don't buy them online from a specialty website or anything?
Yeah, malt's easy. You just call out to Portland. You can get malt from anywhere around the world. Portland.
1-800-Portland. Portland.
Malt. Yes. No.
Yeah. It's like in the old Batman show, like you flip the Washington's monument or like the little bust head up and you press the button and the red phone comes up. Yeah. Portland, we need you right away.
The beer line.
So they make it super easy on you. Hops are a lot tougher, you know. With a beer like this, we're really trying to show off the malt and the yeast as opposed to the hops. So it's very lightly balanced with hops, and they're just there's a little bit of crystal in there, which can give some earthiness and a little bit of dankness, and just provide a little balance.
Right.
But really, the focus is malt, yeast on that one.
So. Well, it's a damn good morning beer. I'll tell you what.
Evening beer. Sure.
Evening beer. I'm sorry.
Either.
It's cold. It's an all-day beer.
I could wake up with it.
So I want to talk about a little bit how you got started. You are originally started brewing at Big Sky Brewery in Missoula, Montana, right?
Yeah. I was home brewing all through college. Grew up in Missoula. Okay. Went
so
to
you're
college
from
there.
You're from Missoula. Where'd you go to school at?
Hellgate High School.
You went to Hellgate. May I ask what year you graduated?
1998.
I wonder. We probably knew some of the same people.
Did you go to Hellgate?
Well, I had buddies who did. Okay. Most of them graduated 2000 or 2001, so a little behind you. But
band kids?
Not a lot of band kids. Were you a band kid?
No, that's our school was like.
So you were a nerd. What happened?
We went to the liberal school that was. We had like the best band in the region.
Did Hellgate have the best band?
And then I was the sports kid, and we just had the terrible sports team. Yeah. So, like, we could barely field the team.
Well, they were...
But our band was flying around the country, like, they got playing the Rose Bowl.
Were they that good? I don't remember. I know they... I mean, they had all the Northside kids, so there was kind of a little rougher school than...
We were a melting pot, yeah.
It was very interesting, yeah.
So by liberal school, you mean you had, like, the two black kids in all of Montana, pretty much? Like,
Michelle Pfeiffer came in to teach special class, and, you know...
She totally turned me around.
Yeah. Oh, that's so good.
Well, I was headed down the wrong path.
This was going to be the Pfeiffer Brewery at one point. The Michelle Pfeiffer Memorial Brewery. She dead? I feel like she's dead.
She, quite contrary, she looks great for her age. I just saw her on, like, E! Or one of my girlfriend's magazines recently.
Yeah. All right. Was she wearing a Catwoman outfit?
I still would.
So you're going to, you were homebrewing.
Yeah. Long story short, homebrewing all through college. Went to UM for photojournalism. Was going to be a sports photographer, but brewing the whole time. And then immediately graduated. No job, no prospects. Just moved out to Portland. And, got a job out there for just a rag of a weekly newspaper in Forest Grove. And
it's called the Portland Times. You don't have to call. You know, you don't have to be so down on it. It's. I mean, I realize that. You know, the liberal rag. No.
And just ended up not shooting the Green Bay Packers home games, but
just the away
Easter
games.
Egg.
Just the away games, and you know, the Pro Bowl, things like that.
You name it. Curves for Women at the local Forest Grove. Yeah. You know. The exercise, Easter egg hunts.
Yeah, I know all about Lane Bryant models after that, huh?
I learned a lot on that shoot.
I need to not drink as much when I go out because I'll wake up with one of these.
was bumming around, not really getting the jobs I wanted, still homebrewing, had a buddy out there who worked for Walking Man Brewery in Laurelwood, and
okay.
He went to brew school, the American Brewers Guild, and I was like, F this photography thing, I'm going to jump into beer and try that, so did that 6-month online course and got an internship with Big Sky and then ended up there for about 6 years doing different stuff. So.
Yeah. Now, how did you end up, was it something like an internship, you were in Portland and applied for the internship in Missoula, or you were just, I mean, obviously they have roots in Missoula, so.
I was making no money, so I just started calling every brewery I could find, writing letters, and then sure enough, my hometown brewery, the head brewer was coming out for the Portland City Brewers Festival that was going on, and he's like, let's drink some beers, and then that turned into shots of Sambuca for an entire night.
That's a rough
that
one.
Does not feel good coming up the next morning.
Ended with me taking my future wife to Mary's Club, because I was like, it's a job interview, it's where the head brewer's going, and then, the next day I got a call, he's like, hey, come do the internship here, we'll pay you a little bit of money, and so I did school while I did the internship at Big Sky, and then just got offered a series of jobs over the next 6 years and worked my way up with those guys. So.
There you go. That's a good brewery to be at. They're a big production brewery. They're not much of a tap. They don't even sell.
They do moose drool, right?
Is right. Yeah. They actually don't even sell pints at their tap room. They just have tasters. It's like 4 free tasters, and that's it. Like, they don't offer
really? You know,
pints anymore.
They get
or they never did, I guess.
So you don't go there to, like, hang out like you would in most tap rooms?
No.
Okay.
They got a tough rap with the laws over there. They're such a big regional brewer mm-hmm. that they're the only brewer in the state that falls into a certain category.
Oh, really?
Where they're not allowed to sell pints out of their tap room.
Is that what it is?
They just kind of get beat down that way. If you go over 10,000 barrels, you're not allowed to sell pints out of your tap room. So they
what, is it because of a microbrew regulation thing, or what are you?
It's a very strong liquor lobby, and they sort of set up the rules that way early on during the 90s. And Big Sky has to give away beer to have
That's
people in their tap room.
That's too bad.
It works out for everybody, but Big Sky.
Oh, yeah, it's not a bad thing. So any of those recipes down there, anything you worked on that was your hand in it still they're making?
You know, none of the shoulder beers are still around, but, you know, we got to play around with a ton of those taps and do a ton of stuff. So I went to Plains, Montana to get away from this place for a couple of days and do some fishing.
How romantic. Yeah, it's like very exotic. Plains, Montana.
I've
been there.
Randomly in the fridge of this cabin that I rented with some buds was a Moose Drool can that I had brewed like 3 years ago.
Oh, no kidding.
I looked at the code.
So you knew that you had actually brewed that.
This may be the last thing I brewed that still lives in the world.
Do you still have it? Like, put it in a Lucite case on right next to your, engagement pictures or something.
In a shadow box.
Yeah. I came home and took the wedding picture down.
Yeah.
Sorry,
honey. Yeah, this is...
Set that up there, but no, it tasted awful. It did not age well.
A stirring endorsement for your own beer. Yeah. Remind me never to have you do my eulogy. all right. So, and then now you've been... I want to go back. Let's talk about your home brewing days. That's what I'm interested in. Obviously you're young, you like beer, you know. What was your inspiration to start home brewing? How were you... Because I keep hearing from all the people who started home brewing first that it took them a year or so before they ever made a drinkable beer.
See, I don't know about that. I was always the kid that... we'd drink PBRs nonstop, and then all of a sudden in college, I had a little money and was bored, and so I ordered a homebrew kit. I was like, I'm going to give this a run.
And actually, plus the student loans, right? Yeah, had a little money.
Thanks, Dad. Blew that pretty quick. And
I got to pay for classes still, too. Shit.
At least I got beer.
Yeah.
Just eat rice, unflavored rice, for the rest of my time in college. But no, I the first beer I brewed was... electric. It was incredible, and it usually goes the other way, but it was, there was no...
Did you name it?
It was
electric beer.
Yeah. Electricity. No, it was a brown ale that I took some raspberries and just steeped them at the end, so it was like a raspberry brown.
That sounds amazing, dude. Yeah. That sounds great.
And because it wasn't all grain, there was no way to screw it up. It was just extract, thing into the...
Sure.
And it was awesome, and then subsequent beers were not so good.
Not
but
great.
That
first time out of the gate was pretty good.
The beginner's luck. You don't know what you're doing, so that worked out. Yeah.
This is easy, yeah.
They're like, this is great. So what is your, what's your preferred style of beer? Do you like browns? Is that why you went to the brown, or was that just something?
No, just messing around, just trying to do my first beer. It just seems sort of easy, you just get the recipe. And you just pour the stuff in. It's not like actual all grain brewing where you have hit the right temps and do all the crazy stuff. It's just sort of, dump it in. It seemed like an easy recipe, but
yeah, kind of the hamburger helper of beer. Yep. Just pour here, eat to this, mix here,
dump in here, walk away.
Yeah, got it. All right, well that is pretty easy. So,
but no, I don't know if I have favorite styles, as you can see with the lineup here, we try and move around the globe pretty good, You were fond of the Scotch Ale, which I took away from you.
You robbed me of my Scotch Ale.
Jerked your emotions around.
Really been trying to get over it. My therapist and I have had a couple long sessions about it. We're working on it.
You still have my milk stout, though, so I'm happy about that.
Still got the milk stout.
Milk stout's good.
So we try and keep, Belgians on, we got we'll always have a beer from Germany going, whether it's the Pils or the Kolsch, and just having our hands in a lot of different things, you know. We don't want to get, you know, boxed into a corner and do one certain style.
Go ahead. I was going to say, do you have an inspiration, so to speak, for what you decide you want to come up with next, what you want to create next to put on the tap? Like, where do those ideas come from?
Yeah, just, you know, going out to the Total Wine and drinking awesome beers, you know, and from around the world, and just saying, man, I'd like to try something like that.
Sure.
So, yeah, it's easy, you know, but after being in the industry for 6 years, you kind of know what you enjoy and what you want to put out there.
How many recipes or whatever do you come up with that you try to brew, and then you try it, and you say, you know what, it's not worthy of the tap, and you dump it? Is there a high percentage of that, or does that ever happen?
Well, all of these recipes...
Like, didn't turn out like I thought it would, kind of?
Not so far across my fingers, but, you know, I've been so busy. I set this brewery up as a one-man show, which has been good in a lot of ways, but I don't have the time to be doing a lot of test batches.
Experiment. Just kind of producing what you know works.
But that's also the good thing about our system is 7 barrels. I feel like after being in the industry this long, I can produce something that's, you know, good and flavorful and balanced without off flavors.
Sure.
And if it's a test batch, we can get through 7 barrels, and if I don't feel like that's a good beer, we just won't come back to it. But so this really is a pilot system for us, you know, just writing a recipe, saying here goes, and
So do you hope to be able to catch up to the point where you've got some backstock and can play around a little? I mean, do you miss that aspect of actually playing around with recipes and coming up with new stuff? Because that's got to be part of the fun, I'd imagine, is really, you know, trying new things out, different flavors and things like that.
Yeah, that's, you know, we're just getting to the point where we're going to take on about 4 accounts and get a little beer around town.
Okay, so you're doing some production stuff, some shipping?
Yeah, in the summer, you know, Spokane, people are at the lakes, they get out of town, and the summers have been, you know, just a little quieter around here, which has given me time to do that. I mean, I was talking to you guys earlier about the Imperial Saison that I threw together. I mean, I think that's the definition of experimenting, you know, just calling my buds over at Iron Goat saying, hey, what yeast strain you got over there?
They're like,
we got this bucket of, you know, the Duvel strain in the walk-in, why don't you come take it, you know? And, just throwing that in a fermenter, not knowing who, you know, I think the No Lie guys had it at one point, whose hands were involved with it and what. It's just all right, let's give it a run, see what happens.
Roll the dice.
Play around with it.
Yeah.
It's the DuPont strain, actually.
So how much of the yeast strain really is, like, creating the end flavors? I mean, I know there's, you know, how long you're letting it, you know, kind of soak for to create the wort, you know, the malts and things like that. But, like, what is the yeast in the end game for the casual beer drinker who's drinking a beer at the end of the day? You know, I mean, what is the yeast doing to that beer specifically, I guess?
Well, the yeast is something that gets forgotten a lot of, you know, with these brewers who start up and they have one house strain on and they're just like, oh, I'm making this beer, throw the house strain in. I'm making this beer. It's part of the flavor profile, and it's a huge part of it, and it's one that gets forgotten sometimes, you know. We have 2 house strains, and we play around with up to, you know, I think we've had 4 other strains go through here in, you know, 4 short months.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, look at, like, this beer here, the Northwest Pale. I use a London ESB. It's, you know, it's a breadier yeast. It comes out. It adds some of those English characteristics that you know, and you control it at the right temperature to do certain things. And with each strain, you have choices to make with temperature and time and how you play with it to produce different esters. It's a huge part of the profile that, you know, sometimes gets lost. I mean, especially when you do get into those Belgians where it's so easy to tell that that's a part of it. But even with some of the strains that aren't that, you know, over the top in their profile.
Yeah.
You do little things that make a difference, you know, like our American 2, everybody has that for an IPA, but you play with it at a certain temperature and you create that soft citrus profile that just adds to the notes of the hops that you're going for, which is usually, you know, Northwest style citrus, stuff like that.
Sure.
You pair the yeast with the style and you just go from there.
So this Northwest Pale Ale you're drinking now, to me, that's it has a little more color than a pale ale generally would. Is that due to the yeast, the malts, or just the timing of certain
malts? Yeah,
that's the malts.
So yeah, the Northwest Pale. You know, I love my IPAs bright and hoppy. Uh-huh. You know, almost gold and copper. I don't know why. That's just sort of my thing. And with the pale, you know, the Northwest Pale slots in as right below our IPA.
Because that has like a copper look to it, more than a pale.
Yeah.
So the malt backbone for this is a lot of Maris Otter and a little bit of caramel malt.
Okay.
And it gives it that deep, not quite red, but that, you know, in between gold and red hue.
Yeah.
And I just like to have a little color with that, have a little more balance, whereas when we get into our IPAs, it's more West Coast style. Less about balance, more about big, bright,
big
hoppy, bold.
Yeah.
So this is Maris Otter is a theme you'll find here that I use a lot. I do with our single hop series. I do the backbone. It's a single malt and single hop, which is like a home brewer's term for a smash beer.
Okay.
And we do that so our regulars can start to learn about ingredients. You know, like this beer here, there's a bunch of different malts, a bunch of different hops. It adds the complexity. It's the recipe that you invented, but to get to know the ingredients singularly, I guess, we do this smash series where we have, you know, Maris Otter is the only malt in there. Our customers can learn about it. And the only hop in there is one hop, and we do a different rotating one each time.
Okay.
So, that's one way to, you know, start to educate our customers.
Sure.
Know? I feel like Spokane is, it's a little behind Portland, Seattle, even Montana.
Yeah.
And I think education is a big part of that. And our regulars love it. They come in and they say, oh, what's the single hop, you know?
Right.
Oh, sure. Amarillo. I'm going to learn about this, you know. Oh, I can taste the difference from the last one. And that's how you start to build that, you know, excitement and, you know, that education.
I feel like they're part of it, yeah.
Yeah, and once they start knowing the difference, it's very interesting to be able to, you know, start picking out what is making a beer what as you're drinking them, be able to really tell why you don't like something and really educate yourself on what you like a little bit more, not just, you know, I mean, me personally, I like browns and porters, but you get a lot of porters that lean too heavier, too smoky, almost a stout for me, you know, where they have some that are very chocolatey or coffee kind of, you know.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of picking out, which I assume is all mostly the malts.
Yep.
And the I've also been told kind of the temperature at which they let the malts introduce the malts. Is that correct?
Yeah. So you know, you got your malt backbone for any beer, and you're mixing. It's just like cooking. You have, you know, you get your malt from the maltster, and you know it's all barley, but it's toasted to different temperatures, lengths, and you know you get your caramel malts, you get your chocolate malts, you get your black, your roast. You know you have that to work from. And that provides the base for your beer, the malt backbone.
Yeah.
So, yeah, with like a porter, you're probably loving the ones that are a little bit more of the two-row, and then you have that chocolatey tone as opposed to somebody who might just get a little crazy with the, you know, the other malts.
Yeah, and just, yeah, a little too smoky or something. So, well, I got to say, I've, you know, I am here quite a bit, hanging out at your brewery, drinking. The one thing I always compliment your brewery on when I bring people here is that they, you guys have got a great lineup. And what I mean by that is you don't pigeonhole yourselves into a specific style of beer so much. You really have, you hit all the points a brewery should hit, and you do them well. You know, you've got your IPA, you've got your stout. You know, you've got all the points that everyone, that a good brewery should hit, and they're all good and drinkable beers, you know. So, whereas, you know, you go to some breweries these days, and they're very much, oh, we do
just
this,
IPA,
very much this style
IPA
of beer. Yeah, you know. And so I like the idea that, you know, you hit all the exact points that a good brewery should have, and they're done well. The location is great. It's a great location. I
love Perry District.
It's actually, to me, it's like, and I wrote a review of the place for our website, SpokaneVibe.com, and what it, you know, what one thing I said in there was that it completely, it is the perfect tap room because it really blends a bar and a tap room. It is a place that people can go hang out at. So many tap rooms are so sterile. Don't seem approachable. Don't seem like places you can really hang out at long.
Yeah.
You know, with the patio, with the way it's set up, you know, you guys have food, or the food trucks come through and have things going on here. Like, it seems like a place you want to come hang out.
Yeah, it's chill.
You know? That's what we wanted to build. You know, I was in production brewing for 6 years, and I would go to these different breweries, and in my perfect world and vision of things, I just wanted a place people could hang out. You know,
yeah.
All these little towns in Montana will have, you know, 5-10 breweries in them. They're all kid friendly because of the, you know, the laws.
Are you
there.
Talking about Butte?
that's not really where I did a lot of hanging out. But like Billings, Missoula,
yeah.
Kalispell, Flat. There's all these family friendly tap rooms, and that's the model we wanted to get after. Because I mean, if you look at the Perry District, it's all about, you know, young families, diversity,
yeah.
and you want people to come to a
place.
Yeah,
diversity.
That's not,
I mean, white people, light-skinned white people, you know,
more
diversity,
white people, yeah.
You know, blue eyes,
yeah.
You know, green eyes. It's all about diversity in the Perry District.
Yeah, we've got it. But,
yeah, we've got. I think, yeah, there might be one Korean guy up the street. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
He owns the liquor store, I think. I know what you're saying.
What we're saying, like, you go to, yeah, we wanted to build an awesome place to hang out because it is all about the beer, but it's also about being in an environment where you want to chill,
yeah.
You know? And so we kind of tried to do that, and I just wanted it to be the gathering spot for
yeah.
this district, you know? You guys look at this, it's like Portland, there's, you know, coffee shops, pub food,
yeah.
pizza, you have this little burgeoning district that's only missing a few things,
right.
Like maybe like a market co-op or something to just tie it all together.
Yeah. I mean, they've got the farmer's market, too, which is, you know, once a week pretty good, too. I mean, that's a good neighborhood.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah. But we just wanted to build a place where, like, you know, I'm from Montana. There's a lot of bars that I love hanging out in, but, there's bar flies that, you know, you want to keep it accessible to everyone, and you
yeah.
don't want some guy, you know, screaming in the middle of the day and falling off his stool. And
just out of curiosity, what were your spots in Missoula?
Oh, man.
Were you a Rhino guy?
I was Red's Bar.
Red's Bar?
Just nonstop.
All right.
I always had the buddies who were the bartenders there, and that was the jam. And then other than that, yeah, go to Charlie's, get the Dinosaur Cafe, beans
right.
and rice, and do that action up. What about you? What were you?
I was a lot of time at the Rhino. I really liked the Rhino. Where else do we... Actually, Lou and I spent a lot of time at the Elbow Room. Which was literally, for my co-host Brian here, who's never been to Missoula.
Never.
It was a literally a double-wide trailer.
You've talked about this.
We need to
take
so
a trip there
awesome.
Sometime.
With a patio. You know what?
It's gone.
A trip
yeah.
to Missoula. I've
well,
never
yeah,
been
no,
there.
Missoula's still there.
It's not worth... Forget Missoula. Now that the double-wide's gone, don't even bother.
Yeah, it's not the same.
That bar was outstanding
yeah, right?
in college.
Oh, God.
Oh, man. Cat Grizz weekend, it was a double-wide trailer. They would sod the entire thing because it's just a double-wide.
Yeah, what do you get? Yeah.
So they'd sod it inside and out. You'd just be walking around on grass inside the bar. Like, what the heck is going on with this place? Just live music, dancing off the hook.
Yeah, I like the Old Post a lot, too. You just hang out at the Old Post a lot. Alan Vicks.
Great bar scene in Missoula.
Yeah, there were some good ones. I was in Red's occasionally. Yeah, Red's, you know, if you want, what was the place?
We'd also go below.
Bodegas if you wanted to try and pick up dumb college girls. Bodegas was good.
This sneaky, super secret spot was under Double Front Chicken. You ever end up under there?
No, I don't think
that
so.
That tiny little bar in the basement?
I don't think so.
Oh, man. There's some good people watching
wow.
stuff down there.
I would imagine so.
An escape from reality. Just
well,
go down there, get a cocktail. And...
I think the best thing was, and I actually still do it, at the Top Hat on Wednesdays. They used to do Wasted Wednesday. It was $5 to get in, and they give you, and it's all
I love the salty Wasted Wednesday.
All you can drink. All you can drink, and it was like PBR, Bud Light, or like Coors Light. Do you remember that at the Top Hat?
They used to have those in, you know, when we were just turning 21. It was Bozeman had the Zebra, and Missoula had the Top Hat, and it'd be $5 all you could drink at night. And sometimes it'd be micros.
Oh, I don't think I ever got that treatment. Cause
I hit the top hat on a moose drool before I knew what was going on there. And the can't believe your luck when you're 21 in college and it's $5 all you can drink.
Yeah. I never want to leave this place.
You stole my heart, top hat.
Yeah, you...
And ruined.
You gave me an STD. but we'll call it even. So, well, what I wanted to do, we're going to... I guess since this is, we've been drinking, we're at a brew here. I've got a list here of the top 10 cities that get the most DUIs in America.
Oh, man.
And
I wonder where this is going.
and I wanted you guys' take. So we can do this a couple ways. Do you guys want to make some guesses? Do you guys want to write down
your
answers?
Let's make a game out of it. Yep, absolutely. Oh, we need to get Ben a piece of paper and a pen.
Let's.
We'll hit pause real quick.
Okay, and we're back. We are still here at Perry Street Brewery with Ben Lukes, the owner. Again, Ben, thanks for hanging out with us today.
This is great.
We had a lot of fun.
Absolutely.
We definitely didn't warm up our beers while we were on break, so don't worry, we're not having another one. what we're going to do now, I pulled a list off the internet of top 10 cities that get the most DUIs in America. And I've had Brian and Ben both write down their answers blindly. Of what they think the top 10 cities are. We're going to see who gets the most right.
Okay.
I did give them one hint that there's three in the state of California. Okay. Beyond that, I didn't give them anything.
That was kind of a given, though.
That was, well, yeah, it's a big state, you know?
A lot of people.
A lot of Mexicans with DUIs. Trust me, most of them are my uncles. so let's let our guest... go first. I'll give you each one and one and one. You'll let you bounce back and forth. So
Ben, go for it.
Then I'll go over the list. So Ben, what's one of your answers?
All right, I'm going 10 down to 1. Number 10, Klamath Falls, Oregon.
That
is specific.
That's very specific.
You ever been to Klamath Falls?
I have been to Klamath Falls.
It's got to be on there.
We have no Oregon on this list.
Jesus.
All right.
Okay, this isn't necessarily in any order, but Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
Baton Rouge, not a bad guess, although I'm going to say...
You're going college football town.
Well, I used to live there also, so...
Keep in mind, I feel like there's not a lot of driving in Baton Rouge. It's more...
Depends where you are.
I guess.
In the more rural areas, not as much.
There's no Baton Rouge, no Louisiana on here anywhere.
Okay, both of us.
Okay, right. Ben?
This is pretty easy. Lewiston, Idaho.
Lewiston, Idaho.
I'll be surprised if it's not.
Gorgeous.
And unfortunately, no Lewiston, Idaho either.
That's outrageous.
That is outrageous. Lewiston, step your goddamn game up. Get drunk and drive more.
Preferably fast with your eyes closed.
Yeah.
Okay, this I wrote this down before your hint, by the way.
Okay.
San Diego.
San Diego. I can tell you that there are three cities in California on the list.
San Diego's not one, huh?
San Diego is not one of them.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Ben, you're still in it.
All right, I'm going back to Idaho. I've got a feeling about this one. Post Falls, Idaho.
Wow, that's very local.
Post
Falls,
yeah. And I guess we're going per capita?
Unfortunately, Post Falls is not on
it
per capita. Yeah, Post Falls is not...
Jesus.
On here. No one's... No
the way they advertise DUI patrols, you think it would be on there.
Yeah, what else they got to do?
That's a good guess. All right, next up for me, Baltimore.
Baltimore, Maryland. You know we were talking about DUI is not killing people, not murder, right?
Well, DUIs Baltimore. Can kill, though.
Oh, that's true. No Baltimore, Maryland, either.
No Maryland or just no Baltimore?
Yeah, no Maryland, period.
Okay.
Still in the game.
Still in the game. All right. Got a lot.
I'm terrible at this. I don't know my drinkers, apparently.
I know for a fact that Minot, North Dakota is up next.
Oh. No North Dakota anywhere on the list.
No. I've driven through all these places. These are
very drunk places.
This should be the top four.
Maybe they're just better getting away with these, drinking and driving. So.
Or they just don't care because that's all there is to do.
I will admit, those places all have a lot of people drunk. But this is where people are getting caught.
Yeah. Okay, next up for me, but I guess I can skip it. I was going to say D.C.
No D.C.
So I'm going to go with my next choice, which was...
Hold on. Oh. Well,
You already said, was that your guess?
Well, you said no Maryland, so, yeah.
Well.
All right, fine. We'll pass, pass it over to Ben. Go ahead.
All right, I got this one. This is my only big city on the list. Houston, Texas.
Cats
taking shots nonstop.
There is a Texas.
Business tycoons.
I didn't even think Texas.
There's no Houston.
Stakes and shots.
Stakes and shots.
You guys do have three California cities on there, right? Told you three cities. California.
Yep. Okay, St. Louis.
No St. Louis. You guys are
come on, man.
I feel like we've got a good mix of big and small going.
You have. Yeah. It's you're gonna,
I'm mostly big.
You know, once you hear these, you're going to just...
Yeah.
I'm changing number five. Jacksonville, Florida. Surprisingly, no Florida.
I had that one, too. I had Jacksonville. What? No Florida,
you know,
period?
Those old Jews drink their Manischewitz at home. They don't...
Everything terrible happens in Florida.
Well, that's true. That is true. Literally, yeah. They have pythons and crocodiles.
Big ones. Okay.
Man, that's hard to believe.
Shoot. Okay, Los Angeles.
No Los Angeles.
That would have been too obvious. I shouldn't have. Okay.
All right. This is pretty easy. If you've ever been to this city on St. Patty's Day, Butte, Montana is ringing in there.
That's a great guess.
I made it 4 hours before I got punched in my eye.
You made it much longer than most people do, but there is no Butte, Montana on this list.
I don't know. Where'd you get this?
I've never seen a cop in Montana, in Butte.
I think this is made up.
This is off of propertycasualty360.com.
And how the hell did you find that website?
It was part of Yahoo News. It was advertised on Pornhub.
Oh, okay. I believe that. That makes sense. Okay, Detroit.
Detroit.
Jesus H, man.
All right.
I got to stay off the big cities, apparently.
I'm going back to North Dakota. You know where that...
He's sticking in the Northwest. He knows. He's determined.
Someone
in the Northwest.
Where they do... There's like that entire part of the state that's a mining town. I'm not sure what it's called. It's like Oil City, North Dakota.
Right.
Anything in there is... There's no North Dakota anywhere on this list.
Even with all the Indians?
No North Dakota. I've been there in the winter. You just drive around smashing into things.
That's all you do. Well, yeah, but nobody cares if you smash into it, and then what?
I guess you have to get caught.
Right? Yeah, right?
Well, the people that you smashed into are so hammered, too. They're just like, oh, whatever.
Yeah.
Windstorm.
By the way, did you hear about that guy who had to make an emergency landing in his prop plane in Florida? By the way, bad things happen in Florida. And ran over a family on a beach? He was trying to do an emergency landing on his plane and hit a little girl.
Jeez.
Yeah. So.
I take it they didn't make it?
They did not make it. Oh, dude, I got it. I'm changing number two. Go ahead.
Chicago.
Chicago.
That's true. That's another one everybody drives, or everybody takes public transit.
Yeah,
it's good.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm pretty certain my last two are going to hit.
Ben? Super easy. People in Wisconsin get wasted. Madison, Wisconsin.
No Wisconsin. This is...
No Wisconsin, guys, period?
No Wisconsin.
Jeez.
You guys are... I think you're going to... Once you hear this list, you're gonna be with it.
Okay, Oakland.
No Oakland.
No Oakland? Come on, man. What, it can't be San Francisco. What's the other...
Ben, you've got one more.
All right.
Your final answer. Going back to my home state. I know for a fact I read the Missoulian almost every day just to see what's going on back there.
Do you?
Darby, Montana,
Darby
has the highest per capita amount of drunken wrecks,
you know,
in the entire world.
I dated a girl from Darby, Montana one time. She was...
How many wrecks did you get in?
Yeah.
That's a personal question between her and I, and I would appreciate you asking me that on air. There is no Darby, Montana on this list.
Ben goes 0 for 10.
Okay.
Brian's got one chance to steal it.
My last shot. Sacramento.
And Sacramento's number 9 on the list.
Yeah!
Comes out in the 9th inning. One home run.
If I was going to get... My last guess was going to be like Everett, Washington.
Okay, I'm going to read you the list.
All right, let's hear it. I'm psyched.
Number 10. Little Rock, Arkansas.
Come
on,
of course.
Bill Clinton,
of course.
Guys.
Yeah, okay.
Where are you at on that one? Number 9, Sacramento. Number 8, where we we sit today, Spokane, Washington.
For D-Lish. Okay.
I guess the valley first.
Well, that's not very true.
I didn't put that because I thought it was too easy.
Actually, edit that out.
Number.
Snobby South Hiller.
Look, you've got reason.
You deserve okay, it. You can be like that.
Number 7, Fresno. Fresno, California, which if you've ever been there, there's a reason to fucking be drunk. That place is terrible.
I'm never going to go to Fresno.
Don't ever.
You've got a shitty minor league.
That is a good goal. That's a bucket list item. Never go to Fresno.
But
check
all
it off right at the end.
Yeah, just like,
they've got a shitty minor league hockey team there, and that's
Do
about
they?
It. Yep.
I went to a fair in Fresno one time because my buddy's mom lived there. I went up there for the holidays, and he has much younger siblings who are, you know, like my little brother and sister. And we went up there, and they had the saddest little ice rink. It was like a 6x6 little ice rink that they had put up on a platform, and kids were just like skating around in this sad little ice
park.
Rink. Yeah. Oh, yeah. It makes that look like, you know, like an Olympic
Canuck Stadium.
So, number 6, Knoxville, Tennessee.
Man.
College town. Damn.
Number 5, Texas. Lubbock, Texas.
Lubbock.
I don't know where that is.
College
Lubbock.
Town.
Yep.
Is it? Okay.
That's where Tech, yeah. Where.
Tulsa, Oklahoma, number 4.
Of course.
I know nothing about those
Sublime
people.
Song.
Number 3.
If we just listen to, like, what's that Sublime song? April 22nd, 1992,
oh,
whatever.
It's about the riots in L.A.
But he lists, like, all these cities at the end.
Yeah,
he's like, Tulsa, he lists some stuff in Ohio.
Cities.
It's like, if we just went off that, we probably could have got it.
That's it. Number 3, Riverside, California. Another place you should put on your bucket list to never go to.
Just so
I don't ever want to know where that is.
Is it part of Watts
East,
County?
No, it's east of L.A., about an hour. Well, it depends on where in L.A. you're from. Hour and a half. This is how nice Riverside is. Riverside was the original setting for the show Breaking Bad because they love meth in Riverside.
Okay.
Number 2, Mobile, Alabama.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. Over Darby, I don't know, but
you can argue the statistics now. The over one and number 1.
I'm going to be contacting that website shortly.
Fact checking. Number 1 is San Bernardino, California. So lots of California. I'm telling you, drunk Mexicans out in the desert.
Well, when I was growing up in Montana, it was legal to drink and drive, and this changed in like 96, 98, somewhere in there. You could, if you were outside city limits in the county, you could drink and drive. If you were under .08.
As long as you weren't drunk. Yeah, I remember
that. And that all changed when the L.A. Times did an expose on Montana and all of the drinking. And
how we had no speed limit at the time, probably. So people are driving like 110.
No, Red's Bar actually put it up because it was so outrageous. The L.A. Times reporter had found a guy who was like, well, if you're going Missoula to Bozeman, well, that's a half rack. And if you're going all the way to Philly, you ain't drinking 24 beers, you ain't trying. And it was just like, oh, I get it.
Yeah.
That's why we lost that
it
battle.
I do miss Missoula in Montana in ways. You know, I probably shouldn't put this on record. I'm sure Statue's Limitations has run out by now. There was a time when we actually crashed my buddy's truck into the statue of the bear on the campus of the University of Montana.
Oh, wow.
We were very intoxicated, and security was chasing us, and we drove into the campus, crashed it into the bear, and then, like, took off. My buddy got caught. I did not.
How awesome of you to stand by your friend.
Yeah. Well, I'm like, fuck that.
You kicked him, and he fell down, and then the cop got him.
Tied his shoelaces together, and I'm fucking out of here. It was a fun town. It was a fun town at times, but that was many years. That was literally like 13, 14 years ago. So
drinking and driving
so you're 12.
Is not endorsed by the 12, podcast, right?
No, of course not. No, no.
Good.
We're actively working with the drug council also.
Enjoy your beer responsibly.
There you go. All right, well, Ben, we appreciate you being on tonight.
One last thing. The owner of Ben should read this.
This is a little note. Well, you set it up.
All right.
Set it up.
This will give you a little window into being a business owner. You come in, you're getting set up for the day, and your staff leaves you a ticket from last night, which appears to maybe be the tip on a beer.
Okay.
So a customer walks in, buys the $4 special, so that was either a Pilsner or a Milk Stout, and then
good
on
choice,
the back
either way.
Of their ticket, they wrote this, and we've all been discussing it, trying to figure it out. Maybe the listeners will have some insight.
We should maybe Google it.
This is a secret to life, I feel like.
Yeah, I mean, if you follow the axioms in here, you might get somewhere, maybe. Here we go. So it's on the back of a receipt, and it's, maybe, is this a poem, or is this a...
What is it? It's just a short story.
It's a short story.
Very short.
Yeah, I mean, it's not quite a haiku.
No.
Okay. It's, yeah.
Well, if you guys out there have any insight, just let us know. Here goes. Once upon a time, a tiger wrote a novel about a king with two dicks in a dream a guy had about a world where tigers can write novels and kings have two dicks, period. Hmm. The king fucked the tiger in the anal and the Virginia, period. And they had six cats and two boys and one pussy, the end.
Yeah, it's...
Now, you said, it said in the anal, in the Virginia. This is on the back of a ticket for one beer. Just how high alcohol concentrate is your beer, Ben?
Drinking Old English.
I started thinking maybe we were over-serving, but as you can see by the ticket...
So $4 tab. Beer,
this guy came in for the cheap Pilsner or Milk Stout, well, so the two lightest beers that we brew.
You know, I feel like it's, like I said earlier, I feel like it's Maya Angelou come back to life. It's just poetic in a million ways.
Yes.
We should be on Oprah right now.
Right.
Me and Maya Angelou and Oprah.
Yeah, where's Gail King at least? I mean, I don't know who that is. How should I know?
So that's good. I mean, that's a good note to end on.
That is, it's a beautiful story.
A king with two dicks and tigers that write stories.
Tigers. I think that's a verse from the Bible, actually. Leviticus 27:15. And thou, there would be a tiger with two dicks who would fuck a king in Virginia. And
in the anal.
Jesus said, let it be so. So.
The end.
So, well, Ben, thank you very much for coming on. Real quick, let's plug some events you guys have coming up.
Yep.
You guys have an event August 4th supporting the schools, community and schools.
Community and schools event. Yeah, we're going to try and raise a bunch of money for basically after school, just having people sort of, it's like Boys and Girls Club a little bit, but they get mentors for kids in challenging areas of town. Great. Also goes to helping feed the kids, you know, who have trouble, low-income families that need money. They send
need
them
beer
home.
Also.
Yeah, they send them home. You send food for the weekend.
Food in a growler.
And beer for their parents.
You're a great man. So
no, it should be an awesome event. Hoping to raise a bunch of money. And that's kind of the fun part of owning a business is being able to throw your business in the hat and help, you know, raise money for good causes. So
definitely. Especially in your community.
Definitely. Yeah. Anything else coming up for you guys? Or
Let's see. No, not too much that I can think of. You know, we just had the street fair, and we're all sort of trying to breathe after that. It was a huge success. And, we're just doing crazy beers, getting ready for fall.
So. Well, everyone go on to Facebook, like Perry Street Brewing. Follow them, catch their updates, come up and have a beer with everyone. It's a great time. So
good atmosphere.
Yeah. So, Ben, again, thank you very much for joining us. So this has been the Social Hour. We are Typical Bastards. I'm Deese.
I'm Brian.
And for Ben, Luke's, and Perry Street Brewing, appreciate you having us.
Cheers. Thanks, fellas.
Thank you, sir.